Ezekiel J. Kralin lives in San Francisco. He's good friends with Ellie Cooney and some other people around here. Actually, Tom Cahill, who lived up at 10 Mile for decades and decades and now lives in France. And he's got tentacles all over the world, friends pretty much everywhere. And he's also quite a writer, and he maintains a website. Zeke Blog is what it's called. I think it's a WordPress website, zekeblog.wordpress.com, it would be if that's the case. And also gay-bible.com. He's an interesting person, a gay activist, I take it. I've been gathering that much, at least so far. The Mask of Horus, A Parable for the 21st Century, by Ezekiel J. Kralin. I'm going to read the first half of this tonight and recap a little bit and read the second half of it next week, because it's just a little too long for it to be this late, and my not having got to the other material that I need to read tonight. So there's that. I should have probably figured out some way to speed up some of the earlier things, but you know, you can't be everywhere at once. Ezekiel Kralin writes, Horus raised his scimitar. It shimmered beneath the bright fluorescent lights as blood drops spilled from the tip. A severed infant lay at his feet. Kukulkan's cookies! He wiped his brow. This new Passover thing is too much like work. Horus kicked the dead parts into the rapidly growing mound of slippery fat. A bell rang, ding, and another babe rolled down the chute and through the swinging panel. It mewled and puked on the cold linoleum floor. Horus struck. That was a noisy little brat, he said. Ding, ding, ding. The swinging door never came to rest until 5 p.m. when the factory whistle called it a day. Horus was ready for a long, steamy shower. There was a lot of hot action in the company stalls tonight. As usual, thought Horus, attempting to undress, while rough, masculine hands reached out through holes in the wall to cop a feel. They hungrily assisted him in disrobing and tossed his bloody overalls into the molecularizer. I'm sorry, the moleculizer. That's a word that I'm not familiar with. Horus leaned forward against the tile wall and let the hot water cascade over his broad back. As talented hands massaged the meaty globes of his buttocks, while other hands proudly caressed his back and thighs, the nub of a chunky finger teased the ring of his anus till the sphincter relaxed. As the finger slid forcefully in, Horus shivered with each knuckle bump. The finger, now deeply lodged, moved in slow, small circles, tickling the prostate. He squeezed his anus to grip the fat sausage as it tried to withdraw. "Are you worthy to unsheathe Excalibur from the stone?" Horus challenged in his darkest masculine voice. "Apparently not," teased another male voice behind the wall, whose finger jerked in mock imitation of a virgin in distress. Horus grunted. "By Thor's hammer, you're fucking good. God damn, what's your name, man? Whose mask do you wear? I want you, boy. I want you bad. Oh, fucking Eros, lick my ass. For daddy's sake, lick my ass, boy. I'm going to burst," he said. All this while shuddering under the hot rains, with a finger working him over and hands gliding firmly over his bulging muscular frame. A glob of cum spread across the mushroom crown that capped his thick, rock-hard shaft in the grip of two broad palms. "Ah," moaned Horus, shivering in delight, as the finger worked its way out, leaving him empty like a turned-over chalice. He reared his masked head toward the shower nozzle. "Mohammed's marbles," he thought. "The fringe benefits in this place are incredible." He dropped another quarter in the coin slot of Hands R Us and bent over for a second assault, but it never came. Nor did Horus. "Damn," he said, and punched the machine before exiting the stall. A coin rolled across the floor and into Horus's big toe. He thought better about bending over, instead looked up in the direction of the quarter's path. Like a vision from Mount Olympus stood a naked soldier beneath a shimmering cascade of water. Wet ringlets of golden red hair graced the shining mask of Alexander. "My, you're the pretty one," teased the boy behind the mask, his eyes riveted on you-know-what. He then walked across the watery floor and almost into Horus's arms. Their plump erections found each other's crotch like doves returning to the nest. Horus twirled a golden curl of hair in his finger, a wedding ring, and sighed, "Ah, sweet Jesus, to kiss you is to kiss an angel." Oh, my silver steed, the boy centurion clicked his mask against Horus's. Thy tongue is the tongue of a serpent. It cuts my heart like thine scimitar divides chaff from wheat. His hand was on Horus's ass, slipping a thumb up and down the crack. Dripping with passion, Horus gently encircled the youth in his arms, resting his hands upon the shoulder blades. He shivered at the touch of such soft skin beneath him and budding muscle, and whispered, "If wings should sprout beneath these hands, still would they pale in comparison to the beauty of man thou art. Ah, sweet 16. But I must go." Abruptly, the boy soldier pulled away, blew him a kiss, and disappeared. "That boy's begging to be spanked," muttered Horus, who decided to pick up the coin and return to his stall for a few extra minutes. Horus walked down dark alleys on his way home from work. He turned around at the sound of an approaching vehicle and reached for his maser pack. His parakeet mask dazzled in the amber lights of a patrol car that rapidly advanced and pulled over. The window lowered. "Hey, Birdman," Cat called to Centurion, hidden in shadow. "Don't you ever take that mask off?" He then leaned toward the passenger door, revealing the mask of Baldur. "Oh, it's you," Horus grinned and swung his gear bag at the open window. The Centurion flinched. "Come on, Horus, hop inside. I'll take you home." The back door swung open from an invisible hand. Horus stepped back. "Gee, Clarence, I hope he's not a heterosexual." "Nah, that's my boy. He's in training tonight." Horus peered inside and saw a naked adolescent in the mask of Dionysus, nonchalantly sprawled across the back seat, spread-eagle fashion. One leg was stretched to the floor, the other bent against the seat back. "Great gonads, you're hung heavy," whistled Horus. The boy shrugged his shoulders, shifted his hips to make a wider basket to accommodate Horus as he dived in. The patrol car catapulted off the street, hovered a moment, then zoomed across the skyscape of New Athens. Cramped between car roof and boy, Horus maneuvered like hand in glove, his warrior skirt creeping up in the process with a little assistance from Dionysus and hands. "Your hands are all over my ass, but I don't even know your name," breathed Horus, spilling late seed in the boy's nest. "That's the best way," he thought to himself. The unexpected lubrication gave him an instant erection and a natural hip-gliding reflex. The young rookie just moaned, too senseless from Cabernet Sauvignon for conversation, yet not too far gone for to position and bend his legs on either side of the centurion's hips, offering Horus a new Whitman's sampler of teenage paradise. Horus fumbled with the gear bag until he found the travel-sized safe-sex aerosol, then fumbled in his mind as to how to shove it under the boy's ass to spray the crack, during which time his erection seemed to go the way of uncontrolled heterosexual breeding. "He's a beauty, ain't he?" Clarence joyfully addressed Horus's buns in the rearview mirror. "Umph. Yeah, a real apple from Eden," Horus mumbled, still fumbling. The boy tried to assist by raising his hips, but found this impossible due to the bruiser body's crushing weight. Happy anyway to be smothered in all this masculine muscle, the youth smiled in delirious ecstasy. Clarence flicked on the air conditioner. His name's Cleveland, by the way. You know, he has a perfect track record, even as a rookie. Not one breeder has been able to resist conversion to male-male love. So far, at the sight of all this buffy darling, he doesn't even have to strip all the way. Bathed in sweat and frustration, Horus surrendered to disappointment for the third time tonight. Being so intimately bound to this copper-toned innocent was in itself a begrudging satisfaction. He tussled the youth's jet-black curls and gazed into those amber Elysian eyes. "Yeah, I see what you mean," sighed Horus. "You know, little Cleveland here has been eager like a pup to bond with you ever since he laid eyes on you in the showers. He hasn't shut up about you for weeks." "Great," the centurion chief managed to say with little enthusiasm. "Eyes now shut." Cleveland snored. "Oh, Horus, I apologize, but the little satyr's still on duty. He's put in an exhausting 5 hours so far, I might add." Clarence looked in the mirror to see the drooping shoulders of a beaten hero. "Ah, we'll make it up to you soon." Horus worked loose the gear bag under Cleveland's hoof, unsealed it, and returned the spray can to its pocket. I know," he muttered. Changing the subject, Clarence asked, "Say, what do you think of this new Passover Yahweh declared?" Horus shrugged his shoulders. "I certainly approve all the way, but I sure am sick of how much work it takes to clean up these calky-sucking perverts." "I know what you mean. Hey, when the het majority keeps ignoring AIDS, saying, oh, it's only a faggot disease, let him die, eventually Big Dick's got to step in, just like he did in Egypt, to free the Hebrews. But this time he's liberating gays, slaying the hetero firstborn of every breeder parent by letting the disease spread throughout the straight populace. You should know, Horace. Clarence glanced over his shoulder. You're the angel of death in both cases. I prefer to think of myself as the angel of retribution, Horace corrected, then mused. Two things I hate most about this job. One, I think I'm getting tendonitis, hacking away with my scimitar so much. It's not worth the overtime. And those sickos really are not worth the trouble. Well, it won't be much longer, Clarence assured. Gays are now rising up all over the world. Before long, they'll become as one of us, to quote the old man. Huh? Oh, yeah, chuckled Horace. Yeah, it's good what's finally happening down there, but I'll sure as Hades be glad to take this Siva-be-damned mask off my face for one and all. Siva. Well, you know the orders. Attention all patrols in Quadrant 14, the squawk box suddenly blared in their faces. Huh? An emergency, Clarence said, grabbing the mic. Yeah, DeWitt here. What's your problem? Just got an alert from your quadrant that a Maverick radio bot is broadcasting heterosexual music somewhere in Sector 119 or 120. Get there on the double and squelch that crap. We're sending reinforcements, stat, to back you up. Right, over and out. Clarence turned to Horace. Sorry to do this to you, good buddy, but I have no choice. Clarence swerved the patrol car at a sharp angle, ejecting his Centurion pal from the back seat at the same moment. Feces, thought Horace, descending to earth in a thick bank of clouds. This is a forbidden sector. I'll get chewed out good for this one. As he fell, the fog cleared, revealing the Transamerica Pyramid, the Bay Bridge, and, of course, the Golden Gate. And next week, at about this time, maybe a little bit earlier, you'll hear part two of The Mask of Horace by Ezekiel J. Cralin. The Mask of Horus, a parable for the 21st century. So let me just mark that so that I don't forget to read you the second part of that next week.